The Passover story is familiar to most of us who have spent time with the Old Testament scriptures. I like to say the Hebrew scriptures. In the Jewish tradition, Passover is also a season with its own significance and rituals. And this year, Passover stretches from April 14th to the 22nd. Having brought a truly delightful perspective to State of Belief regarding Christmas and Hanukkah a couple of years ago, Rabbi Brad Hirschfield is sure to have some valuable insights on this special time, holy time of the year. Brad, welcome back to State of Belief.
It's great to be with you, Elton. Thank you for having me back.
How offended are you by all of those dang Easter bunnies that you have to see everywhere in the weeks around Easter?
This might surprise you, but I'm actually not. The truth of the matter is I'm not, for two reasons. One of them is simply that I believe we would all do better off to bring whatever our beliefs or disbeliefs are with the full force of our pride in them and let them be tested in the marketplace of ideas, whatever one believes. So I never feel that the American public square is a finite space, and so if we have more of one thing, we'll have less of another. In fact, for me, it's not zero sum, and I always want more. And that's kind of the political, conceptual, social response. There's also a spiritual response for me, which is that the harbingers of Easter, and Easter itself, not accidentally, of course, is deeply related to Passover, not only historically, but also in some of its fundamental claims, if this rabbi can say that about a Christian holiday, mm-hmm. about the importance of rebirth, of resurrection, the possibility that what was once enslaved can not only go free, but is meant to be free.
Man, that's why I love you. I mean, you are no wonder you're such a facilitator of interreligious relations. But let me go on and ask what is obviously an even more important question. Talk, if you will, about the role that Passover plays in the Jewish religious calendar.
Sure. I mean, this is fundamental. This is the first of all holidays, biblically speaking. In fact, although the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, is observed in the fall in the Hebrew month called Tishrei, according to the Hebrew Bible, it is in fact the first of the month of Nisan, in the spring, the month in which Passover falls, that the Bible says, this will be the first to you of the new months. Time begins in the Jewish liturgical calendar with the ancient Israelites' move from slavery to freedom. That is the fundamental moment of the founding of this nation, is the claim that nations deserve, are entitled, must be free. And this is simply one example. How it comes to be that Rosh Hashanah, the new year, is calculated in the fall is a whole other discussion. But in terms of the centrality of Passover and the centrality of human freedom, it's not at all surprising that this becomes central. The fact that it's also celebrated largely at home, that it allows people to celebrate around a table with special foods and family traditions, that there are low barriers of entry, that the very first claim at the Passover Seder, that is the kind of half liturgy, half meal, half dinner party. There you get three halves. Mm-hmm. How Jewish is that? That is, let all who are hungry come and eat. Because along with the necessity of freedom comes the obligation of compassion to others who are in need. So it's not just about being free. It's being freed for some larger purpose, which from the very beginning is about caring for those who don't yet have the benefits of that kind of freedom.
I'm well aware that this is a family-based, home-oriented celebration, memorial. How would a congregation mark Passover?
Well, it's marked in the congregational setting, first by special Sabbaths leading up to it, when there are scripture readings that announce the coming of the new month, and the Sabbath before the beginning of Passover is actually called the Great Sabbath. And it's called the Great Sabbath as much as anything because traditionally is when rabbis would stand up and give great lengthy sermons. And it was typically done, so it was probably only great for the rabbis, not so much for the parishioners. But be that as it may, it was a time when they would talk about all the various laws and rituals and actually prepare people for how to celebrate it. So it's interesting. Congregations will typically prepare for the holiday by inviting the community to prepare itself to go home and celebrate. It's also a time, frankly, of the gathering of material resources for those who are in need. Because if the central acts of this holiday are the consuming of four cups of wine, and the breaking of bread, in this case matzah, which is unleavened bread, then there was, again, along with that opportunity comes an obligation to make sure that those who cannot otherwise afford it will have it provided for them. And so it's also a peak season of what's called in Hebrew tzedakah, or charity, or almsgiving, to make sure that people's most fundamental needs are met, because the tradition understands that to talk about being free in any kind of spiritual or intellectual way, without also attending to people's very real-world material needs, would actually be a kind of cruel joke.
What is it like in the Hirschfeld home during Passover?
In a single word, bedlam. It is a wild combination of richly observed, strictly observed traditions, which I can explain a little bit, and complete bedlam around the table, which will typically begin around sundown and often go on until 3 in the morning. It is, in fact, kind of the Jewish tradition's dream, because it is a ritual centered not around the answers we give, but around the questions we ask. And so now imagine a table full of people, mostly, though in our house not necessarily exclusively Jewish, and the only rule is, you can ask anything you want, because that, too, is a marker of freedom. So you can imagine how it gets pretty long. And then you add some wine into the mix, and you can really see how we're going till sunrise with no problem whatsoever.
The last time that I was at a rabbi's home for Passover, we got out a little before 1. So
there
it wasn't quite as long as
you. I would say the main thing is that people should feel lifted by the experience, whether it's a one-hour Seder or a 7-hour Seder. The through line should be, do you actually feel the best sense of yourself emerging, a deeper connection to those around the table, and a sense that together you can go out into the world and leave it better off for everyone else? If it does those three things, the truth is, it may be in Hebrew, it may be in English, it may be in Spanish, it doesn't matter. It may be more strictly observed as it is in my home, or less strictly observed from the standpoint of tradition as it will be for others. The truth of the matter is, I believe you will be able to experience the essence of this holiday, whoever you are and wherever you are, if you put together an evening in which telling a story of the past makes you feel better in the present and empowers you to make a positive difference in the future.
Brad, I love the emphasis you placed on asking questions. And I think that one thing that was surprising to me the first time I did this in a Jewish home is that it is also a fun meal. And there is laughter, and there are jokes, and kids get to kind of play a game. And I think some people don't know that.
Listen, when our kids were little, it involved puppet shows. I mean, it involved dressing up as characters from the story. So it's a full-on theatrical experience in some homes. Because, again, while the issue of freedom and liberation is a very serious issue, to be fully free is to bring all of your human capacities, which are gifts from God, including humor, including laughter. So to reduce the celebration of freedom to something purely somber would actually be saying you can only be free if you cut away pieces of who you are. Instead, I think what the Seder does is says, no, you want to be free? Figure out how to bring all of who you are, all of your faith and all of your doubts, all of your answers and all of your questions, all of your serious moments and all of your laughter, all of your reverence and all of your irreverence, all of your intellectual needs and all of your physical hungers for those yummy Passover foods, and bring them all. And that's the beginning of experiencing genuine freedom.
I've got to, I'm running out of time, and I've got to ask you one question that's not related to Passover, but I want to come back to it in a second. I've got to ask you what you thought of the movie Noah.
You know, the truth is, I think it's a great movie. And I know that's going to get me in trouble with some of our literalist friends in whatever religious camp they happen to be in, which is, of course, its own story. It turns out that a literalist understanding of any tradition, regardless of the tradition, is actually the same. And an expansive tradition of any tradition is actually more similar, no matter what language you happen to tell it in or what word you use for calling upon God. For me, the power of the film was that it took seriously an ancient biblical narrative and allowed contemporary storytellers to make it their own and try and find meaning in it. For me, agreeing on the meaning of these texts is actually nice but not centrally important. I believe the reason we're still using these stories and living our lives in light of these stories 2,000 to 3,500 years after their characters told them the first time is because each generation has had the opportunity to make the story their own. And that's the irony. In making the story our own today, we guarantee both that we will remember the past and hand it off to the future.
So good. Listen, we are celebrating both Easter and Passover this year in a world that knows a lot about division and a lot about violence, a lot about poverty. The celebrations that we do can't be irrelevant to that. So as you sit down to the Passover meal this year and you think about people who are looking on who really don't know why you're doing it or what it's about, in a minute, tell us the relevance of Passover for the world in which we live.
Sure. I'll do it from one word, which is the Hebrew biblical word for Egypt, which is Mitzrayim, which actually means tight spot. Every one of us has our own personal Mitzrayim, our own personal Egypt, our own personal tight spot, and the opportunity to gather with those you love and tell a story of previous generations who got out of their tight spot as a promise that you too can get out of yours. And even if it's hard to see how that'll happen, to imagine that you're entitled to it and it will happen. If you gather together with those who want to help you and trust in it, you will be able to make it happen. That's Passover. That's the journey from Egypt, Mitzrayim, a tight spot, to a wide open place of possibility, of human flourishing and possibility.
Rabbi Brad Hirschfield is president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. He's the author of You Don't Have to Be Wrong for Me to Be Right, Finding Faith Without Fanaticism, a book that is only more relevant today than even when it was first published in 2008. Brad, it is always a joy to talk with you, and I never get off of an interview with you without having learned something important and also been inspired, and that's why it's always great to have you with us on State of Belief Radio.
You're very kind, Welton. I can honestly say with no exaggeration, you and your work inspire me, and I wish you the holiest and happiest of Easters.
Thank you, brother. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your generous support is essential in helping to make this show possible. Please visit stateofbelief.com and consider making a financial contribution to us. Today is a good day to do it. We'll use it wisely to keep State of Belief on the air and to expand the reach of this program. You know, every week, we hear from listeners across the country who say they rely on our show for the kind of inclusive, respectful approach to interreligious dialogue that they can't find anywhere else. That's sad, but that's true, and we're glad that we're here for them. StateOfBelief.com is where you'll find out more about this show, hear extended interviews, watch in-studio videos, read transcripts, and sign up for our podcasts. I hope you'll stay in touch with us throughout the week on Facebook and Twitter. The listener line is 202-681-4246, and we encourage you to tell others about the show. Get together and listen to it, so that you all can talk about what we're talking about and we can engage each other on these mutually considered important issues. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. Could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what he was.